Dublin.
Welcome to In Conversation, a Dublab podcast where each week we will bring you interviews from the Dublab Radio Archives.
Michael.
Oh, wait a minute. I can't hear you.
Ooh, okay, how is now? Can you hear me now?
Yes. Now yes, and now I'm wearing headphones, so... Just give me a second.
Let me see.
We are.
I'm getting a good signal here.
Yes, very good.
Yeah.
First of all, I've never heard you pronounce your name. Is it Ale?
It's Alejandro is my name. So in Spanish it would be Ale.
Ale.
Yes, okay.
So Ale. That's fine.
Ale, yes. Yes.
Machine is running, so my answers will be on the tape.
Fantastic.
Well, good to see you, I think, for the first time.
No, actually, about a bit over a year ago when Solo won, the first one of the two box sets came out, I interviewed you with my friend Spencer here at Dublab.
And okay.
Yes,
right.
Yes. But I wasn't on camera and I was the co-host of the interview. So
I'm partly right.
Yes, exactly. Yes, yes. We were emailing a few months ago before COVID-19 happened in trying to bring you to LA. And my goodness, what a different situation we're in now.
Right.
Yes.
A tough one.
Yes. Am I talking to you today from your home?
No, I'm in Italy.
You're in Italy.
Yes, I escaped Germany when the borders were opened. And I drove my partner. She's Italian. She lives here. And so I took the opportunity and didn't waste a day. So I drove down to Pisa.
Okay.
Wow. A two-day drive.
Well.
Yes, long drive.
Yes, with you, did you bring with you any equipment to record, or do you always carry with you any instruments or any basics to just keep creativity flowing?
Usually I fly to Pisa. In recent years, I always had a direct flight from two different airports, Berlin or some other place. But in these days, Corona, I didn't trust the airlines, so I thought, okay, this is a terribly long drive, but the advantage is that I can take musical gear along and much more stuff, other stuff, and that's what I did. And also a nice recording. It's a small handheld PCM recorder, and it has a very good audio quality. And yes, of course, my partner is also interested in music and she has many ideas. And so we are also spending some afternoons or evenings working on her material. Yeah,
yes.
Keep the ideas flowing.
Yes, sure. Yes. Who knows? It may be, correct me if I'm wrong, but this may lead to your first record made in Italy.
Well, I don't know really. Maybe you also follow the development in Europe. The figures are rising, the infection rates, and I'm not so sure really how to handle the situation. I actually wanted to return to Forst, my home in Germany, in September, at least for a certain period, because I have things to organize there also. But right now, I don't know. You know, if it would be terrible if I just passed the Swiss border into Germany to hear in the radio the news that the borders were closed again.
Yes.
And of course, this may not happen from one day to the next. But you can't be too sure. Yeah. France has terribly high infection rate, and Spain also. And I think we can consider ourselves lucky if we avoid the return of the lockdown, which we had in spring.
Yes, exactly. Yes, here in Los Angeles, it's Los Angeles is a very peculiar city in how it is structured. So, in many ways, I always say, and fortunately, and in a way, kind of selfish, I could say, but it is a city that it offers more of an opportunity to not create your own adventure in a way. You know, there's a lot of things you don't have to come across if you don't want to, which is sometimes tragic that you know you should be confronted with certain realities. But the way the layout of this city, the way the neighborhoods are laid out, it's very, very spread. It's huge. It's a huge city.
I know. Yeah. I've been to Los Angeles, and I have impressions. I have memory of the endless row of houses and places and suburbs and. Goes on and on and on.
Yes, yes, exactly, yes. I remember seeing you here in Los Angeles live at the Knitting Factory years ago with John.
That must have been 2004. Yes. With John Frusciante and Josh Klinghoffer on drums.
Yes.
Yes.
That was a great
show. It was a great experience. It was also surprising for me when John invited me to come over for concerts, that he wanted us to perform my solo music.
Yes.
Because when we met a year earlier and then started talking about doing something together, for me it was clear, okay, we'll improvise. We'll do some improvised music. No, let's play Gloria, let's play Palmengarten, let's play The Doppelgänger. He had a total list of all the tracks he always wanted to play. It was very funny. And he even had to show me how to play the guitar on Palmengarten because I hadn't. I just recorded that track in 83 and never played it again after that. But he knew exactly how to play it.
That's great. Yes. I know John through one of our DJs, Marcy. She's they're a couple and they're partners. And I met John a few times, and he recently DJed on Dub Lab with Flea, and they did a retrospective on their early influences, a lot of punk. They focus on a lot of the punk and hardcore from LA. And he's the one, the times I met him, he's a wonderful guy.
Right. So I was surprised when I heard, I don't know when it was, a few months ago, when he suddenly rejoined the band.
Yes, I saw it in the news too.
Yeah. I was very surprised. I was surprised when he left and also when he rejoined.
Exactly. Just wanted to talk to you about the solo two, the solo part two, the box that's coming out, and I was very pleasantly surprised. I have to say, I was familiar with. I would say most of your work, your solo work. I haven't heard before the work you've done for movies when you compose for soundtracks. I didn't know. I wasn't familiar with that, and I obviously I wasn't familiar with the new record. But it was a wonderful listen to discover, and I have a lot of questions about it. It's really fascinating.
Great, just go ahead.
Yeah. Great. Let's see. Where do we start with this? One of the things that first struck me the first question about the solo two is the break on solo one and solo two, and why. Start at any one part and start in you know where it starts, right? I don't know if that makes sense. Why do you divide them? And I can assume some things. You're saying you had to stop somewhere, otherwise it would be this huge box set of endless amount of kind of vinyl, you know, or CDs. But it, was there any decisions on why you stopped there, and why you started off for solo two?
Yeah, I remember talking to Mareike Hettler of Grönland Records when we first thought about doing a box set. And she told me even the German superstar musician Herbert Grönemeyer, he sells millions of albums, he released a box set of all of his albums and it didn't go well. If you know, if the box set becomes too expensive and it, the people cannot afford it, you can't just expect that people spend €500 or $500 for a box set. And I think because Mareike is also a very clear thinking person, she had this idea, the box set should not cost more than a certain amount, like €130. This is something we can justify and expect fans to be able and willing to pay. So yes, that was the beginning of the talk. And then we discussed ideas, concepts, or moved them around in our minds, what kind of order. So it was not clear from the beginning that it would be a chronological order. It could have been a box set of not even albums, but of music selected by some person, like a trusted person who knows about music, has some outstanding personality. And that would have been like a curated version of my music. But then we didn't continue with that thought, and it made sense to just chronologically release all the original albums. And then that was box set solo one, the first four solo albums, and then the film score and the remixes and live recording. That was what could fit into the box set for the maximum price people would have to pay. Yes. So that was the beginning of the plan, and the box set went very well. It was very successful. People really appreciated that, and it was clear that sooner or later we would also release the rest of my solo catalog, all the other albums. And this year I was actually surprised. It was March. I came back from a concert in Austria, and coronavirus hit us, and all the concerts were canceled. Everything just fell apart. And then there was this idea, okay, then let's release all the other albums, do another box set. And then I thought, well, now that I don't have any concerts and I'm not rushing around the world anymore right now, I should perhaps look into my archives and pick up the work which I knew all the time was waiting for me to continue working on it. The material of the recording sessions I did with this British singer and cello player. She only sang for me, but she's a wonderful cello player, by the way, Sophie Joyner. And that was a session I did with her in 97. And a selection of those recordings were released on my album, on the last solo album, Remember the Great Adventure. And after that album was released in 2004, Of course, first I concentrated on, for instance, playing with John and Josh, and also Secret Machines. That were great experiences. And then I started playing live all over the world with Harmonia also, and then later with my solo project. And I knew all the time that there was this... journalists put the tag gold mine on it. You know, I'm not sure, it sounds a bit strange, but like in my own sense, it was a gold mine. I knew that it was a very productive period. There was so much material left unreleased. back then. And so I started looking into the material, the recordings, and that was then clear that I would do a new solo album and also include it in the Solo 2 box set. That was the story of March.
Yes, yes, yes. Oh, okay. And then was there any, I noticed that obviously the first box set focuses mostly on Sky Records, the releases from the Sky Records era, while Solo 2 is Polydor, and then the later releases on other labels that release your music, such as Random Records and so on. Did you approach the records on these two labels differently? Did that mark a different way of working when you were creating these records, influenced by the label and the way they worked? I know sometimes that's the case with artists.
Oh, that's an interesting question. Actually, this has never crossed my mind. I would never let a label interfere with my artistic choices, really. This is something that was removed from thought when we started Neu. This was always our decision, and the label got the finished recordings and was told, this is the new album. And you know, it was not being arrogant, but we are the artists, and this was our idea and our child, sort of, the music. And maybe we were always a bit different from many British or even American bands who have producers and art management and talking with record companies about how to achieve more sales, something like that. You know, we were always only focused on creating something that pleased us, first of all, that convinced us, and then it was the decision of the people to either like it or reject it. But the basis was always we recorded and released the material that we were convinced of.
Yes. I wanted to touch on the new work, right? You look at releases or the newer work, things that music from Speranza or Remember the Great Adventure and even Dreaming. And I started noticing a departure from the, how can I put it, the classic core sound of Michael Rother as you're known for, and you see I hear the embracing of other idioms in music, of other genres. You start hearing some touches of drum and bass, so you start hearing things of things sounds from other influences that were happening in the world, and with Dreaming, it almost feels like full circle, where it's a full merge of the two, where I feel like there's a lot of the very classic sounds with other influences really blended into almost undistinguishable the two separations, and that's mm-hmm. what I heard a lot in going chronologically in your releases. Mm-hmm. Do you think do you see it as such? Do you see a change in the way you compose music, or you were listening to music, or taking influences from other parts of the musical trends, music spectrum that's happening?
Well, of course, we're talking about quite a span of time. You know,
yes.
We're talking about Lust, the first album in Solo 2 box set, was released in 83, so that's nearly 40 years ago.
Yes.
It's incredible, especially for me, because it still feels so close. You know, when all the albums were remastered this spring and I checked all the new mastering, I had to listen very carefully to every second of every album. And it was an interesting trip to go through all those albums again. I, of course, I know I really know every second of every album. It's deep in my system. It's engraved in my memory. But enjoying the improvement in sound, which the mastering engineer achieved this year, was also wonderful. And maybe I'm not the right person really to explain my connection to the outer world, because I'm so close to everything. But it is clear that over the years I found new technology, new possibilities of sound creation, and stumbled upon new sounds which were happening in the musical world. For instance, on the album Lust. By the way, maybe I should explain that the German word, the title Lust, is not the English word lust.
Yes.
I think this is not obvious for English-speaking people.
It is not, yes.
Yes, and Lust is joy in German. It's like you've heard these German expressions, Wanderlust, like the joy of hiking.
Hmm.
That was something that came up in the early 20th century. And anyway, so Lust comes from the word for joy. And I think this is quite an appropriate name for the project, for that album, because I was in quite an optimistic mood. I discovered the Fairlight music computer in 82 and really went crazy creating music with these new possibilities of sound creation, drawing waveforms, and incorporating samples, which back then was, before that, it was not possible. It was something that was so new. And so that was the Fairlight music computer, and the influence technology had on my music is an example of 83. And in a less obvious way, it was also the case with Süßherz und Tiefenschärfe, the album that followed in 85, which, for instance, on the first track, Süßherz, the track takes a lot of the what I call beauty, I consider beauty, from the fact that back then I was able to buy a wonderful reverb unit, a Lexicon 200, I think is the name. And that was the first time that I, in my own home, in my studio — I started the studio in 79, the professional recording gear — but I didn't have a wonderful reverb until then. And the guitar, if you listen to the track Süßherz, it's so much more beautiful with this this machine. So technology also enables special creation of music. I would not say that it determines the music. I think the music still comes from my heart and from my wherever the ideas come from. I have really no idea where they come from, and I don't even want to know. This is a secret path. It's something from the unconscious world, you know, deep inside, and then suddenly you have this melody. And anyway, to continue the talk about technology and influences from the outside world, you may know that I stopped listening to other people's music mostly in the early 70s. And even today, I'm not one of those people who turn on some music source in the morning and turn it off in the evening and listen to whatever comes on all day long. I cannot do that. I love music very much. It's such a beautiful way of spending time and being inspired and being moved by emotions in music. But I need to be able to focus entirely on music. I cannot just let music run in the background. This, I don't know how other people can do that. I know many people who do it and listen to music just while, I don't know, working. And this is something I'm not able to do most of the time. So
yes.
From time to time, I discover something and then I go crazy and listen to it over and over again. Some beautiful piece from different ethnic backgrounds. Do you know the band, the Tuareg band, Tina Riven?
Yes, of course. They've been to Double Up once before. Yes, they're incredible.
Yes, that's how I feel. I saw them live in Hamburg once, and I get goosebumps when, you know, when they start singing. I have to be honest, in the beginning I was a bit skeptical about the Western way of playing the guitar. But they have beautiful sounds on the guitar. It's yes. It's a special sound. But when they sing in this language, which I don't know, their own Tuareg language, and it's pure emotion. So it's for me just like music. And in that concert, I remember when the choir, it's like it's one solo singer and the choir responding. And so when they join together and answer, this is like, yeah, it's amazing and gives me goosebumps. Yeah. Because I don't know what they're singing about, maybe, but even if I knew, it could still be wonderful.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, it makes me think a bit of, to quote you, that you were saying that your taste is limited, but I love the part where you say there's a whole world of music and I have narrowed it down to 5% of the horizon, but I'm very happy because if you get closer, that 5% surrounds you 360 degrees. And I think that takes me, what you're saying takes me a bit to that quote, this idea that you find more in limitations than you thrive more creatively in limitations than in this ever expanding universe of music, and maybe that's your departure place. Work with the elements you know or you hold dear to you, and from there you create.
Well, of course, there is so much music. It's just unbelievable. If you open your ears and eyes and you go on a journey around the world, what all the different kinds of music you find is just incredible. What I mean, of course, when I say I narrowed down the horizon to 5%, this is just, of course, a figure. Maybe I narrow it down to less than 1%. Would be more closer to the truth for my own music. But this is also a fact that is true for nearly everything, like science or art. You know, if you look at, now talking about my sphere of music, if you look at the so-called crowd rock music from way back, like if you're not familiar with the music, you think, oh, okay, that it's like looking at the night sky with the stars you see. You think they are all very close together. That's what you think.
Yes.
But when you get closer to that topic in art or music or the stars, you notice, wow, this star is 300 light years away from the star you thought that was just next door. And transferring that idea into music, you discover, okay, if I really get close to crowd rock, I accept that term, although I don't like it, you know, I have to say, and you see, okay, can very interesting music, but when I get really close, I notice they're not that similar to Neu as I first thought, or Kraftwerk, or these people are like universes of their own. And this is maybe what I thought. When you get closer to the music, to these different kinds of bands and people, you discover there's a whole new horizon, 360 degrees. I recently saw this documentary about the beginning and the end of the universe. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say on Netflix. I was very impressed. So I understand only less than 1% of what the scientists were talking about. But the idea of understanding the beginning of what we consider the universe, like the first, I think there was one scientist saying, we are now quite close to understanding what happened 1 millionth of a second after the Big Bang.
Yes.
So, I mean, this just blows your mind. And of course, if you hear the distances, the space, the vast amount of space, it's very difficult for the human mind, for my mind at least, to fully grasp the consequences of that.
Yes, yes. It's interesting when you talk about the so-called crowd rock music as people for many reasons, for practical reasons, utilitarian reasons, we put things in boxes, we label things, we catalog things, for better or for worse, sometimes just necessary just to simply be able to carry conversations, right? But it's interesting you bring up the topic that all this all the music from this era or this place on Earth it wasn't such a united front as you would think, right? And with that, do you find it surprising, looking back in your career, what gets picked up by history, and what is remembered by history and what is not? Things that you at the time would have thought like, oh, this was amazing. How come no one knows about it? And other things be like, huh, I never thought history would have picked that up, you know? And that could even be applied to your own music. Do you run into that?
Oh, of course. You may know that Harmonia was a total commercial disaster in the 70s. And that surprised me a lot because I just loved what we did. I was totally convinced that this was important. For me, it was important music and music that the world was waiting for, sort of.
Yes.
With a joke, with a smile. But and then I found out it was quite tough to accept that my love was not shared by the audience in the 70s. And so I now know, which I didn't know then because I didn't know what would happen. I didn't really look into the future in the 70s. I was just working from day to day, and I didn't think, okay, 30 years later, people will understand this music. I think that would not have given me any strength or hope. It was just, okay, we have to get some money together to pay for the repair of our band bus. And yes, we're not making any money. That was difficult. But I know now that Harmonia music is around the world, has reached audiences and young people in a way that back then in Germany, hardly anyone would have thought possible, because they thought, oh, this is terrible, this is boring, and this is just stop, please stop playing. And so I know the evaluation of music, the understanding changes. It can mean that something that is considered great at some point will be forgotten 10 or years later, or maybe even earlier. That happens to many musicians in which I saw maybe more pop music and very successful musicians who disappeared after 3 years and you never heard of them again. But it also means that some things can survive, sort of, because music survives. And it's available on record. And maybe you've heard of this wonderful documentary, John Was Trying to Contact Aliens, which is now also available.
Yes.
And John Shepard, the guy who is pictured in the documentary, he played harmonia music into the universe.
Yes.
So
yes, that it'll probably be heard in 500 years. Those signals will reach some faraway planet or 2,000 years. Who knows? Yes.
And then there will be someone who says, "Oh, they were cool cats there."
Yeah. Once you see a peak in sales from other planets, orders of records.
Who knows? But yeah, this documentary I really would like to point out because it really touched me. Such a interesting story and a great documentary.
Yes.
And our music is in it. And
yes.
To hear that he was playing this music already 30 years ago, there was this man somewhere in, I don't know, Montana somewhere.
Yes.
I didn't know anything of his existence and of his ideas. And there was our music going out into space. This is a very strange and it's a wonderful thought.
Yes, yes. With Solo 2, in a way, the release of this box set represents a kind of a closing for you, meaning that there's no other box sets to be done after this. That there's no other solo records. When you did Solo 1, there was another catalog, another second half of the catalog, and also with Solo 2, I see in the album Dreaming has an image of a family. And is that your family? Is that you as a kid?
Yes, that's right. It's one of the few great photos of my family. My father took it of my brother, my mother, and me in Karachi, Pakistan, must have been 1960. And it's such a wonderful photo, and we look happy. And when I started talking with the graphic designer Walter Schönauer, who worked on the design for the package of Solo Box and Dreaming, we were going through photos out of boxes in my archives, and he noticed when I picked this photo up, the print, that I got quite emotional. My brother died early this year. My mother died already 17 years ago. And of course, my father died when I was 15. Also, seeing this as a, I don't know, of course, I'm not neutral. I'm not, I have a very strong feeling connected to this memory. But I think it's a wonderful work of cover art. And this is the reaction I've been getting ever since this image has been distributed, that people say, "Oh, this looks lovely," and it is really my family.
Yes, and to me, I'm looking for a connection that is not there, but I do see a connection in trying to give this rounding up everything in your life is the two box sets, Solo 2, incorporating the rest of your solo work, including other material, and with that a new record, and including a photograph of you and your family when you were a child. It's almost to me putting everything in place for you to start a new era from here. I don't know if that makes sense. And if I had to ask you from here, from Solo 2 and from Dreaming as your solo record, what's next?
If I only knew.
Exactly. Of course.
I did another interview and I was surprised by the question that this person, he was afraid that this could be the end. And he also referred to the video of Bitter Tang. And he was happy to hear from me. No. I just released, now all the solo albums are available in two box sets, but it's not considered, at least in my thoughts, it's not the end. It's also not clear whether I will take off into a different direction. This I will always leave for the moment. So it's not, I never work in the way that I have a theoretical approach, like now I will start doing reggae and
I would love to see that.
Yeah, who knows, maybe it would even work, but this is not how I go about when I start working on music. It's just what happens in that moment when I play guitar or some other musical instrument and I collect ideas, and the feelings I have in that period will determine where I'm heading. So yes, I can only say if I'm permitted to go on working, you know, we all know there's no guarantee for that, but if I'm permitted to keep on working on music, I definitely will.
Yes. Well, it's funny because that person was seeing it as, is this the end of something? Well, I saw it as, are you setting it up for a new beginning? Meaning that sometimes I know some artists need to almost exercise this work, putting it out in the world so they can move forward and give closure to things. So almost like clean the slate and be like, okay, now I can think clearly. So at least I didn't see it as the end. I saw it as the beginning.
Yeah, that's interesting. I never saw it that way because, of course, all of these albums that are in the two box sets, they have been with me all the time, you know, Traumreisen, Esperanza, and that, all these pieces of music never left me, and I don't have to put a closure to anything. It's just really very practical. I want the fans to be able to put the music on the two box sets in the shelf, and then maybe listen to, select an album for an evening, That's the only idea. I don't want to distance myself. I don't have to distance myself. I know that when I start working, I will be different again. It's a natural thing to feel slightly different, although maybe my personality, which doesn't change so radically, will still shine through, and maybe I will just keep on repeating myself. Who knows?
Yes, on a side note on what you were saying of playing, picking from the box set your record to play in the house, I often play your solo records while cooking. Usually, I would go through two or three, you know, and play them. They're just great companionship while you cook a meal. I find it very
okay.
Yeah, very comforting.
That's right. That just reminds me, the wife of Connie Plank, Christa Fast, she also loved my solo music, and she told me she put on the music when she was cooking and when she was doing housework. So this is a memory that just pops up when you say this. I, of course, I have to, and I gladly leave it to each and every person to decide in which circumstances my music makes sense to them and they want to listen to it. It's clear that if you focus on the music, if you really fully concentrate, then you will hear details which will, necessarily escape the concentrated, the distracted mind when you're also doing cooking. But that doesn't mean that it's wrong, because you can see music as a collection of details. If you like put on headphones and you really focus on each individual sound, or you can feel it as a whole, like a sum of an emotion, some atmosphere. This is, I understand that. And being a musician, the way I work is I usually listen to details. So it's that's something that also bothers me from time to time when, for instance, I go and play billiards with a friend in Hamburg and there's music in the hall. And I sometimes don't like the music, not so seldomly, but then I notice, wait a minute, your mind is partly distracted. I'm listening to the music. I should concentrate on playing billiards because my friend is very good, so I should really concentrate. But a third of my brain is following the music and like processing the music and thinking, okay, after this harmony, the next one will be this, and the melody will go here. And so this is not a curse, but it's sometimes it's a problem for me, because you're exposed to music everywhere. If you go shopping, you hear music, and you know it's there not is, the music you choose.
Yes, there is one time I was interviewing the artist Juana Molina. I don't know if you're familiar with her work. Juana Molina, she's originally from Argentina. Wonderful work. And that was a complaint she was making. She said, we live in an era where everywhere you go, you have background music and we no longer enjoy silence. And she said at one time she chose to travel by boat, thinking it would be this wonderful experience from the, you know, turn of the century experience where it's quiet. And they were just playing on the deck music all the time. And she said, I just ended up spending most of the times in my room trying to escape this awful music they were playing, and where I just wanted to hear the ocean and so forth, and similar to what you're saying.
Oh, I can totally relate to that feeling, and I have the same experience. I don't know, it seems that many people need information, musical information, to feel relaxed. I would also love to listen to the sound of the waves and the ocean and the wind and nature sounds. And it's a funny idea. Of course, when I, for instance, go with my bandmates on a tour and we take a ferry, there's music everywhere.
Yeah,
you can't escape.
Can't.
No. But I really also love the sound of silence. By the way, what a wonderful track. I recently heard Simon and Garfunkel again, and it's a song I heard back then, and I realized, even though it was not exactly my kind of music back when it was released, but how wonderful this piece of music is. They, Paul Simon and Art Garfunkel, they did great stuff together.
Yes.
I'm sorry, I'm always distracting you.
That's great. I wanted to talk to you earlier about the most obvious question you probably answer over and over about kind of early influences and what you were listening to, but I just didn't want to kind of go from such a probably travel path. But it's interesting to hear that Simon and Garfunkel, it's something you appreciate now that maybe at the time wasn't necessarily what you were into. In those days.
Right, but I even then I knew this is special.
Yes.
It was clear that this is sort of unique. It stood out.
Yes.
Back then. And listening to it now, wow, I have so much respect, and I really, the sound of silence. So, you know, we were talking about silence, but yes. That it was also a great piece of music, non-silence.
Exactly, yes. As an artist, I know that I was reading a bit on the description of the box set where it describes... a bit of your path for those the years, some of the years that the box set Solo 2 covers, and it talks about around the late 80s where you were going in a way through as you describe, it was kind of a hard time where you felt like there wasn't so much of a reception of your work, and you just kept soldiering on in developing your sound, your craft, and as an artist, and I think those are the moments that it really tests you as an artist, where is it about, do you thrive, do you do it just to get good reception from the public, or this is truly your expression that you're going to, your art that you will continue doing regardless of the reception? And these are the moments to show that really your strength as an artist really comes forward, right? And to ask you this, obviously you soldier on, you continue developing your craft, and as a musician, and I wanted to ask you, do you rely on any sort of like personal exercises or routines or things to keep you creative? I know creativity can be almost like a muscle that you have to use, right? And the more you use it, the more kind of it produces. What are the day-to-day things that you do, if you do at all, to keep you going as an artist for in the good times and the not so good times?
Well, you're right. The late 80s were, and the 90s actually also, beginning of the 90s, were quite difficult. Harmonia never really happened. Disappeared. The harmonia music disappeared in the late 70s from the record shops. Neu disappeared in the early 80s. The albums were out of print. The record company didn't put them on. And by the second half of the 80s, also my solo music sort of lost fans. People were listening to other kinds of music. And maybe you have to be stubborn to survive. And I guess I am in that way stubborn. I was, of course, I have to say, I was very fortunate that my economic situation was stable. I know that the test is much, much bigger for an artist if the artist is also struggling to survive and to pay the bills. This was luckily never my problem. I was careful with the incoming money. I knew very early on that my biggest desire was to stay independent and not having to accept bad deals or anything that went against my convictions. So that was always how I spent the money. I didn't buy Maseratis or houses or stuff like that. I spent it on musical instruments and being independent. So when in the late 80s I presented an album to the big companies and they kindly rejected, friend. You know, there were always some people who loved some ideas, but the higher ups sooner or later always said, thank you, this is not what we are interested in right now. I, of course, it's your memory can trick you, but I know it was a difficult time, but I had no choice, and I had the freedom after maybe being frustrated for a while. I went back to work and I started working on new music. And like with Harmonia, you know, I I would not have stopped the project Harmonia in 1976 after the commercial failure of Deluxe. I would have continued. It was only the decision of Berdelius and Moebius, who didn't want to continue, that forced me to go solo. And so I would have continued, and I felt the same. I wouldn't accept no for an answer, sort of. You know, I just said, okay, well, I will record some more music and then I will try again. And even the second album in the early 90s had the same fate. It didn't go anywhere with the companies, the big companies. And that's why I had to start my own record label, which was never my intention. I never wanted to be a record label manager and having to deal with all the decisions that are required. But it was liberating, because once I had everything together and could release all my catalog back then, and only use a distribution company, SPV was the company I had a deal with, I could move forward. The music was around again. It was alive in a way.
Yes.
It was in the shops. And I was sure that when I started working on Esperanza, I would release it on my own label. So I'm not sure if I really answered the question, but I think there's a certain amount of stubbornness in me that just doesn't accept if my love is not echoed in a way that I want. I mean, I can accept that when people tell me, okay, I don't understand your music, you're a nice guy, but your music, I don't know. I'm into something else. That's really, I can accept that.
Oh my goodness.
I was together with a woman for many years, and she really didn't understand my music, I think. This is something I can totally accept.
Yes.
You know, she liked George Michael and Sting.
Yeah. You're like, okay, that's okay. Yes, you can live with that. Yes.
Yes. So. But I just, for myself, it's clear that I just continue working if I may.
Yes. For what I see, it's a combination of a very pragmatic steps of keeping your finances in a way that won't sink you, that will allow you to quietly do your thing, and obviously when the channels to put out your music are no longer there, then finding or creating your own channel to put out your music, it's also what brings you inspiration. You're like, well, it's not through here, but now it's going to be through this other way, and now I can continue in a way quietly, if you want to say it, I know, or in your own at your own pace, developing your craft as a musician, right?
Yeah, I was very happy, and I never regretted the decision to do all that non-musical work to get a label going and hire people to do promotional work. But of course, you also learn. So I learned a bit, which is interesting and which I may use for other periods in my musical life.
But
the main thing was the music was no longer only hidden in some locker. It was out in the open, and the people who were interested could find it. And this was so important to me. This was also the reason, or maybe one of the main reasons, why I was so unhappy in the 90s when my Neu partner, Klaus Dinger, refused to accept any of the offers we got to release Neu legally. I mean, back then you had the bootlegs everywhere.
Yes.
I found Neu bootlegs in New York and in Sydney and stacks of them. And we had these talks with Daniel Miller of Mute Records and other people who wanted to release our music. But unfortunately, that was a dark decade in that respect. My partner Klaus had very different ideas and expectations. And the good ending was that Herbert Grönemeyer, the German superstar, suddenly appeared out of nowhere on our horizon and was determined to get Neu on his label. And nobody could have expected that. You know, I knew Herbert Grönemeyer as a musician in the 80s and 90s. And if you had asked me, somebody had asked me, do you think Herbert Grönemeyer will put out Neu music next year? I would have said, well, this is highly unlikely. Yes. But it happened, and so I will be forever thankful for to Herbert for concentrating and investing so much energy and time in convincing Klaus. And maybe I shouldn't be unfair. Klaus cannot explain his decisions anymore, but bringing Klaus and me together to that extent so that the albums could be released, and they are available ever since. And that was a new chapter in my musical life when Neu was re-released all over the world in 2001.
Yes, yes. Did that bring a different place, or maybe this more of a personal subject, but did that bring you closer to Klaus? Did that bring a difference in the relationship when that happened?
That's a tricky point, really. I must say Klaus was a very difficult partner. Again, because he cannot explain his behaviors or his decisions anymore, I feel sort of compelled not to say too much about that. Yes. He had his reasons. I couldn't understand them. I didn't accept them. And our relationship stayed difficult until the end, until he died, I think, 2008, or was it 2007? I think 2008. Yes. There was even the idea of recording a new Neu album. But I was very, very skeptical. And of course, my expectations of recording a Neu album were high. I would not just have released something believing that if I cough on through a microphone, it would be just so marvelous that everybody would need it. You know?
Yes.
This is always the thing, working on music. I work until I am convinced. The bar is quite high. You know, I have to be totally happy and convinced of what I'm doing, and then I'm happy.
Yes, yes.
Well, and sometimes I stay happy because I realize that my love for the music is shared by other people.
Yes. Well, that's wonderful. That is truly wonderful, and I'm really grateful for the opportunity to talk about the box set, Solo 2, to talk about Dreaming, which is a very inspiring listening that I've been enjoying. It's been a companion for the past week or so on repeat, just to understand it, and I really look forward to what's the next chapter in your career in your. I wouldn't call it career. I don't know how to say it. It's funny to say career. It feels too professional almost. But in your adventure, in your travels.
Yes, sort of like with a sailboat on a big ocean and reaching a new coast. Who knows? And of course, I would also enjoy going back on stage, you know, traveling the world like we've done. Yes. And playing to audiences and experiencing the joy music brings to people with yes. the people in the same moment. This is a different situation from working in your private studio and then months later finding out that someone feels happy about it. This is very, it's a wonderful feeling, of course, but to be on stage and then have this excitement in the same moment as you see smiling people in front of the stage, you see people hopping around being happy. Yeah. This is, it's a great experience and a privilege, of course, for a musician to experience that.
Yes. Well, hopefully we can make it happen here in Los Angeles soon. We can resume conversations and find ways to bring you here to LA.
To 2021, let's hope for the best.
Yes. Sounds good. Great. Well, thank you so much for joining today in conversation, and truly wonderful. And we'll stay in touch.
Thank you, Alan.
Yes. Thank you so much, Michael. And
it's a very early time for you, huh? I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. I have children, so I wake up really early. Anyways, they wake me up really early, and so it's not a problem at all. Yes.
All right. Yeah. And say hello to John if you meet him. I think of him a lot. So I hope he's happy, and I hope to see the Chili Peppers again, meet Flea and meet the boys. Yeah. Dublin.